Welcome to a burning fire, Jeremiah 20 and verse 9. Your speaker is Jim Boyd. Now, we want to study a lesson later on about the responsibility of the congregation to the elders. But this particular lesson is now the responsibility of elders to the congregation. And let us first note two passages of Scripture. 1 Peter chapter 5, verses 1 through 4. The elders which are among you I exhort, who am also an elder, and a witness of the suffering of Christ, and also a partaker of the glory that shall be revealed. Feed the flock of God which is among you, taking the oversight thereof, not by constraint, but willingly, not for filthy lucre, but of a ready mind, neither as being lords over God's heritage, but being ensamples to the flock. And when the chief shepherd shall appear, ye shall receive a crown of glory that fadeth not away. The second passage from Acts chapter 20, beginning with verse 28. Take heed therefore unto yourselves and to all the flock, over the which the Holy Ghost hath made you overseers, to feed the church of God, which he hath purchased with his own blood. For this I know, that after my departing shall grievous wolves enter in among you, not sparing the flock. Also of your own selves shall men arise, speaking perverse things, to draw away disciples after them. Therefore watch and remember, that by the space of 3 years I cease not to warn everyone night and day with tears. And now, brethren, I commend you to God and to the word of his grace, which is able to build you up and to give you an inheritance among all them which are sanctified. Those who serve as elders are to serve willingly, not by constraint. They should desire to work for the good that can be done, 1 Timothy 3 and verse 1. None ought to assume that duty if he's not willing to perform the work required. Few things are worse than having the wrong man in the right place. A man in leadership, and elders, and must be men, of course. A man like that, though, who is reluctant to discharge those duties of leadership, or maybe who seeks the position of an elder for other motives, he will become a hindrance rather than a help to the cause of Christ. And how difficult it is for brethren to do the work that God has assigned to his church when those who lead, who have that task, will not perform their task. An elder must have a noble, pure, and godly motive for being an elder. He should not seek it for filthy lucre or personal material gain. This implies that elders may well have been paid in the first century. Better termed, elders who were materially supported by the church in the days of the early church, that seems very likely. We learn in 1 Timothy chapter 5, verse 17 and 18, of the duties of the congregation to the elders, and we support those who preach. Friend, if it is deemed expedient, if it's needful, we can certainly support those who oversee the flock. We might wonder why preachers are sometimes erroneously called and considered to be pastors of the congregation. Probably this is due in part because few think anyone but a preacher should be supported in order that God's work be done. And while some have gone off the deep end with a clerical staff not unlike the foolishness of the denominational clergy, there is biblical authority, if it is deemed reasonable, to support elders who do the work. A good case could be argued that it might be better to support elders so elders' work can be done that requires them to provide the things that are necessary for the congregation be better to provide for them than to support preachers. Of course, we don't have to choose one or the other, but we need to know that either one and both are authorized. Even so, the motive for being an elder ought not be just to receive support. Not to receive money. That ought not be the reason for his work any more than that ought to be the reason that preachers would preach. Neither ought the motive for being an elder to be to acquire some kind of honor or glory to oneself. Now, this seems to be a shortcoming of too many who become elders. It should not be in order to discharge power or to possess control. And you might be surprised how many times this proves to be the case. that the congregation begin seeking men to serve as elders, or maybe to be added to the existing eldership, and some began campaigning for the place as if they were running for some kind of political office or seeking some kind of honorary degree. The motive for being an elder, friend, is to serve out of love, to help promote the cause of Christ, to assist every member of the congregation to get to heaven, regardless of the personal cost or sacrifice that work might demand of him. And elders are prohibited from being lords over God's heritage. Now, while they have authority, it is a delegated and a limited authority. They do not become the executive officers of a business firm. They should not act like spiritual directors expecting everyone to jump whenever they shout frog. They are not bosses over their personal employees. They ought not be like Diotrephes, who loved to have the preeminence among brethren, 3 John verse 9. And they are not taskmasters with the members of this as their servants. How many times we've seen men who are called elders act in just such fashion. I once served under a man who called himself an elder, who expressed his concept of an elder toward the preacher this way. When the boss tells the employee to move that box, the employee must move that box. Well, possibly this is true in an employee-employer relationship. But I left no doubt in his mind that I was not his employee, and he was not my boss. We were brethren in the Lord, serving in different capacities, with the eldership having the oversight of the church. I was not his peon to be bossed about. What an attitude! He did not know the difference between the use of authority and the abuse of authority. Elders do not have the power nor the right to dictate, to command, and to lord it over others in the church. Just who some of them think they are, we really wonder. Do they think they've been elected to some kind of mini-god status? Some elders treat the people in the church and their physical properties of the church as if that was their personal asset. They save money like they would save their own, rather than using it for the work that is intended. They seek to lay by in store for what might someday happen in some far distant future. And after many years of being in debt for a building, and the final payment was in sight, suggestions being made as to how to use that money, since the payment would no longer require it, one elder suggested that we provide a savings account and build up a reserve. And when asked why, he said, "You just can't tell what might happen." You see, this particular man was recalling the Depression back in the 1930s. And here it was, over 50 or 60 years later, and he still had that Depression mentality. He was asked why we should accumulate a savings account, since we did not have one even during the years of indebtedness. Friends, souls are dying for the lack of the gospel. And he, like too many others, thought it best to prepare for retirement and to save all that rather than to save all that could be saved. What a mistake. He was more concerned about saving money than he was saving souls. Elders need to learn that the church does not retire when they do. The church is ongoing. The church is growing. The church is living. Some will allow generations to come and go before they would turn loose the funds to do the work of the Lord just because they might have had hard times a half a century ago. Friend, this is lording it over God's heritage. That ought not be allowed. And it's certainly showing poor stewardship of that which has been entrusted to their care. Shepherds do not drive their flock, they lead it. And elders are shepherds. Shepherds are considerate of every sheep, seeking what is best for each sheep as well as the entire flock as a whole. And just here, it's worth reminding us, as sure as the congregation ought to practice the golden rule toward elders, the elders should have the same attitude toward the flock, every member of it. We have witnessed some elders treat members with such discourtesy as if it really did not matter what was said and done to the member. We have seen and even experienced from some elders treatment toward preachers that they would be aghast if they received that same kind of treatment from anybody. Real love for one another will not allow mistreatment of anybody. We should try to put ourselves in the place of the other and work for his and her good. Good sisters have just been brushed aside. Needy brethren have been denied and humiliated by elders who just lack understanding. But how they want others to hold them in esteem. Elders must want to go to heaven and want the families under their oversight to go to heaven and to work to that end at all times. And while all of us may not totally agree on matters of opinion as to how to reach the assigned goals, we most assuredly should treat one another with brotherliness. And elders are commanded to take heed. Now here the elder is pictured as a watchman. He's on guard, being alert to the needs as well as to dangers. He is to be attentive and informed. He's to be aware and up to date, with his eyes and ears open, able to detect what endangers the souls of his flock so he can protect them. Detect in order to protect. And this watchfulness begins with himself. He can never allow himself to become the tool of a faction that seeks to take over the church or to run the other elders out. There are brethren, and some of them are preachers, who cast about the eldership seeking whom they may deceive in order to use that elder to advance his own aims regardless of others of the eldership and regardless of the congregation. Elders must ever be alert to such people and not fall prey to such people. Indeed, he must take heed to himself. Of course, he cannot lead where he will not go. He cannot teach what he does not know. He cannot help others to be what he himself is not trying diligently and sincerely to be. Elders must give attention to their own lives as much, possibly more, than others, because of their place of authority, because of their responsibility of guidance, because of their influence. He must give attention to his own study, to his own knowledge. He must be very mindful of his family. He cannot allow them to just do as they please. One of his duties is to be an example. But what kind of example will he be if he does not rule his own family well? He must take heed to his speech and his temper, his habits, his attitude, his motives, and his faithfulness toward God. Friend, it is no little matter that he assumes when he becomes an elder. He must also take heed over the flock, his charge. He must know his members, know their needs, know their families. He must be willing to spend and to be spent on their behalf. He must be on guard against false teachers and false doctrines, evil practices and inroads of digression that some attempt to promote. He has the duty to warn and to protect, even to chastise and to enforce God's will. Sometimes elderships will let bad situations just rock along, and they just go along to get along until the bad situation gets the upper hand over the entire church. No, elders have the care for each soul, and they shall give an account for each soul. And knowing this, they should be very aware and very attentive to each one, and attentive as to what is going on, both in the local church and in the brotherhood generally. What an awesome responsibility he has before God and before the brethren whom he loves and whom he leads. But the elders also have the duty to feed the flock. Now, as already noted, we can see this means more than simply providing a preacher, while this is certainly included. And they have to be careful whom they present before the church. They must be careful what they endorse, who they endorse, and even what they appear to endorse. They are being derelict in the duty to the congregation if they do not know the people that they put before the flock to teach and preach. They should investigate, they should examine, they should question, they should measure before they present someone before the church. Some elders never seem to accept their duty to know their man and for what he stands, They accept somebody's suggestion, and in comes someone that could cause the church headaches for years to come. We've heard of elders who learned that some preacher they invited was unsound, but because they had already invited him, they said, they considered it too late to make other arrangements. They just let him come on, and the flock gets the idea that the elders approve of him, and the flock begins to accept him and his influence, and this is detrimental to the church. This is totally unjustified neglect of duty on the part of the elders. The elders must not only drink deeply of the water of life for themselves, but they must see that the pure truth of God is taught, either doing the teaching themselves or through others. And they are the ones that are ultimately responsible for what is done and what is taught. There should be no allowance for unsound people, unsound materials, unsound practices in their congregation. Their charge to watch means that they must know the word and to be able to convict the gainsayer, to refute the error, and to defend the truth, and not give place to false doctrines, no, not for an hour. When truth is taught, they should stand with the ones who teach it, because they too stand for the truth. And continuing this theme, if all elders had been more vigilant, the human legalism of yesteryear that was so destructive to the church would never have found a home in many churches. The doctrine of premillennialism would never have divided brethren nor been given opportunity. The error on marriage, divorce, and remarriage, this wave of Pentecostalism and liberalism and modernism, and the modern perverted so-called translations would never have given place to destroy if elders had been more attentive. It takes courage to withstand a false teacher, especially when he's a relative of some member or maybe some friend. But elders owe it to the church that they serve to be informed, to keep informed, to know what's going on in the world and in the church, and in the colleges that influence the church, and in the papers. We have seen in our time elders who simply do not know, and some act as they do not want to know, and they're jealous of anybody else who does know. They've adopted the position that it is their sole task to simply keep the peace at any price, rather than to keep the faith. Many have sacrificed truth in order to keep peace. Such neglect of duty has taken many congregations into digression, dear friend. Some elders had rather find some compromise and keep the members who promote error. They want to collect their contributions, they want to have their numbers, and they want to be personally accepted by others rather than to stand for the truth of God at all cost. Most of us may be familiar with that classic expression by former President Harry Truman when expressing his responsibility to rightly use his authority. He uttered a good phrase, "Elders have the duty and owe it to the church to take the oversight in matters pertaining to the local church." As President Truman said, "The buck stops here." There is a difference between overseeing, which is their responsibility, and overlooking, which is to neglect responsibility. Many things are overlooked because elders are not attentive, and they are not willing to work. Maybe they do not care. They are not informed. But everything the congregation does is their responsibility. The lives that their members live, that's their responsibility, and they shall give an account. They have the authority to discharge their duties, but with that authority goes responsibility. And while they may solicit help from others, they cannot be content to remain in indecision on matters that they must decide. Have not we seen matters drag on and on, and month after month, and even year after year, because some elders will not fish or cut bait, so to speak? They refuse to assume the duty that they have. Often the choices that must be made are not easy, but they are the ones that must make the choices, and they cannot neglect them. This is a part of providing for the flock. We once encountered a neighboring congregation where their preacher stated some outright lies about another preacher from his pulpit. The offended preacher called his hand once he learned of it, and later also consulted the offending preacher's elders in the matter. And amazingly, not only would the offending preacher not apologize or even try to prove his accusations, but his eldership would not require correction be made. They stood behind the preacher that lied, and they contended that even though their preacher was in error, they were not responsible for what was said in the pulpit. Why, friend, is it any wonder that that church later suffered strife and division over the liberalism that that lying preacher promoted? You see, decisions have to be made. The local church is not to be operated like a democracy. The system that God calls for are those who oversee the church, and they are to oversee it, and the elders are the ones who do that overseeing. Elders must be courageous enough to provide the oversight. And if they are not, they should step aside and let some others do the work. Now, something that's already been mentioned about example. We are to imitate Christ, and those who lead should show what this entails. Just how elders who drink alcoholic beverages or smoke or dance or gamble or curse expect to properly lead anybody is beyond our thinking. Oh, they'll lead all right, but they will lead members to hell if they follow them. If one is not willing to live a righteous life, he should never be in the eldership. And if he's already there, he should be removed. The work of an elder, it requires great time and energy and thought and prayer and sacrifice and good judgment. It requires the knowledge of the truth, and I think it also requires what might be called a thick skin when meeting criticism. Criticisms come. So many times the criticisms against the elders are just simply unjustified. If one will not prorate his time to give to the work, he ought not assume the responsibility for it, to be sure. And all he will do is to retard the work. The cause of Christ will languish unto him because he does not give time to attend to it. But thank God for the good elders who have made their work the major activity of their lives. And friend, there are many such men. It's been my good fortune to have been associated with just such elders time and time and time again. And we return to this point in order to emphasize how every institution must have those in authority. Now, there's a difference between having authority and being authoritarian. Elders must rule, but not obnoxiously, as if they were so superior to others. They must rule and exercise the power that they have with an open and considerate heart toward others. And how many times has power and authority ruined otherwise good men and crushed churches because elders failed to see, failed to use, and failed to control their authority? How many times have we been privileged, however, to see the Lord's cause move forward and souls be won? Because the men in leadership respected, they appreciated, and they rightly used their authority. You see, God's system of government for the church works. And it works efficiently when God's pattern and God's plan is followed. And when something goes awry in a congregation, it's because somebody in some way has left God's way for doing things. Because God's way is perfect. But there will be a rich reward awaiting faithful elders. Many souls will be in heaven because of such men that otherwise they would not be in heaven if it had not been for various elders. Peter said, "When the chief shepherd shall appear, ye shall receive a crown of glory that fadeth not away. Indeed, for those who serve well, there is a well done that awaits them." As I stated, it's been my privilege to work under the oversight of several elders and elderships, with but very few exceptions. They've been extremely good men, trying to do what they ought and what they can to lead the church, and have been my guides and my counselors and to my benefit. We have at times encountered some of the other sort, of course, but thankfully there have not been many like that. Some members and preachers have suffered under bad elders. Many of us have been blessed with very, very fine elders. And most of us, especially those who have moved from one location to another. We've seen both kinds. But we can confidently say that good elders and good elderships, they are a blessing to everyone with whom they come in contact. And it is our prayer that their kind may be numerous in the church. This has been A Burning Fire. Your speaker is Jim Boyd. Until next time.